So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Gentlemen, welcome once again to the show brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. And by the way, when you guys are at LouisvillePolitics.com, join our RSS feed and join our email list so you stay up to date with all the latest investigations and everything else we've always got going. In the meantime, a lot happening tonight. We're just going to get right to it. Hello, Mr. Martin. How are you?
All right, Mr. Springsteen.
Man, I tell you what, go Cards!
We gotta talk basketball. It's politics, yeah. Basketball first. Come on now.
Well, we definitely gotta get into basketball first. I tell you what, I watched the Louisville-Wichita State game on Saturday. I watched the game last night with the Louisville women, and you know it was almost like watching a replay last night. The Louisville women were down, with a few minutes left in the game, but they came back and ended up winning. It was like just watching a replay with shorter players and longer hair. But I tell you what, man, they showed a lot of grit. Both teams showed a lot of grit and a lot of determination. And I'll be honest with you, Louisville has a lot to be proud of. The city does, because two teams in the NCAA finals, from what I understand, I was talking to Paul Holliger earlier tonight, and Paul is an ace researcher, as we know. And there's only been two other teams in history who have ever pulled off that double. I just find that incredible. How about you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And one of them is Connecticut, unfortunately, who the women have to play. But, I didn't see them as a replay. You know, I watched the men's game, and, of course, I was going crazy, thinking, oh, God. All the razzing I've been getting people about it is like, hey, it's about to come back, thinking, whoo, I'm glad I didn't buy a shirt yet, But they came back. They showed a lot of grit. But the women were just, they're a blast to watch. I mean, they're not supposed to be there. They're the first number five seed to make it to the finals.
Yep.
They're not supposed to be there. They beat what's supposed to be one of the greatest teams of all time. And they did it with, with aggression and grit when they beat Baylor. I mean, they're just, the men's team is when they're clicking, they are a thing. It's awesome to watch them do 40 minutes of hell on whoever gets in their way. You know, the defense makes you feel like you're playing seven guys instead of five. But the women are just, I mean, and I really hope they both win, but thank God, you know, this, we always talk about, you know, people in Kentucky talk about Calipari,
mm-hmm.
his recruiting classes, and they talk about Pitino, who's a hell of a coach. But, you know,
well,
think about it, we got Jeff Walls that's been here 6 years or 5 years, or he's been to the Final Four and the final game twice.
Yeah, well, it's really fascinating.
And his team is stacked with local talent.
Well, if the Louisville men win tonight, it'd be the first time in NCAA history that a college coach has won a championship with two different schools. So that'll say hell of a lot for Rick Pitino. What was really fascinating about Louisville, though, because I tell you, in the first half in the Louisville men game on Saturday, and what was ironic is they were both down by double digits at halftime. But in the men's game on Saturday night, it was really interesting because Louisville was down by 10. Russ Smith had a real bad start, and it was kind of like, and I don't normally like to talk bad about referees, but in the first half, primarily the first 10 or 12 minutes, there were so many bad calls made that went Wichita State way, I was just incredulous. I expect bad calls every game. I used to referee youth leagues. You know, and I understand you're not going to get right all the time, so I don't really like to harp on referees. But, you know, it was really interesting, too, because you could see the absence of Kevin Ware in the first half. And the reason I say that is Kevin Ware, you know, as everybody knows, broke his leg last week. You know, it was ugly, ugly thing. But Kevin Ware, if you ever had to look and see what his importance to this team was, it was in the first half because Russ Smith, Peyton Sieben, and Kevin Ware do this rotation. So, you know, during a game, when you play the kind of press defense that Louisville plays, you can get a little bit of a break. You know, you can get that minute or two to relax. But with Kevin Ware not there, when Peyton Sieben got in foul trouble and had to sit down, Russ Smith had to pick up the slack on defense because, you know, clearly, I mean, you know, Henderson was a great replacement. He made two clutch three-pointers. You can't say enough about this walk-on at U of L and the way he handled the pressure. But, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, though, Smith had to take a lot of the load in the first half, and it showed. But in the second half, they found their rhythm. But it was incredible because at one point, the first 45 points of the game, Louisville starters had 20 of them, but the bench had 25. And that is what makes a good coach, is what your bench can produce. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, that's, again, that's a, that, you know, we harp on UK and one and done sometimes. They do field some awesome talent. But that just goes to show, you know, sometimes it's not always the superstars. And it's really cool at a college level when like you said, the walk-ons, the guys who are riding the bench, the guys that are coming off the bench can come in and in a big-time game. I mean, it's the biggest so far this year. And they deliver the goods. And that's just cool. That's a well-coached team, and, you know, and it's a team. That's what's really neat. It's not five superstars. It's 11.
Well, that's exactly it.
Play as a team.
That's exactly it, because Van Trees, he came in and did a great job. You know, the thing Van Trees brings to the table when he's in there, you know, Gorgui Dang is a shot blocker. He's great at it. There's no doubt about it. But Van Trees comes into the game, and he does the little things that make your team better. I mean, his picks, his rolls, I mean, everything that he does to set up the offense, working that triangle as a center, is incredible. He makes opportunity for the rest of the team. He doesn't get mentioned a lot because he doesn't have high-scoring games, but he's not supposed to. But then, you know, you look at Van Trees coming into what he did. You look at Tim Harrell, or, you know, Harrell coming off the bench and playing the game that he did. Then you look at Tim Henderson, you know, two clutch three-pointers back-to-back and really did a great job getting the team inspired. You know, but you really got to look at Luke, man. You got to look at Luke Hancock. And this guy tried to take that game over single-handedly in the second half. And that's what pumped everybody up. And I got news for you, man. You're right, because these guys played more team ball on Saturday night than I think I've seen them play all year. There's no doubt Louisville has the talent, and there's no doubt that they played team ball most of the time. But the heart that went with that team ball, and after that game was over, you saw them giving credit to everybody. And that was the sign of a team. If this team wins it all tonight, You know, it's a great made-for-TV movie, even if they were the overall number one seed. You lose your best number six man in Kevin Ware. You got a walk-on coming on, making clutch shots to start the comeback. I mean, you know, there's so many things there. And the women the same way, man. It's just totally incredible when you watch these two teams. And to be honest with you, they were two similar style coach teams, which was really a surprise to a lot of people.
Yeah. Like I say, of all the coaches, Pitino's going to get his accolades, and the men's, all these men's coaches, they all get their accolades. But Jeff Walls, wow. You know, like I say, doing it with local talent, you know, no superstars on the team. I mean, he has his better players, but no superstars, no 6'8" chick that can slam the ball like Baylor. And he gets it done. You know, he does more to get it done. Without all these superstar classes, without all these preseason rankings, here he is again. You know, we're talking at work, as you do in warehouses, talking sports, and it's just like, you know what? Before too long, the five-star recruits, the big ones, the big-name recruits, are going to start taking notice. It's like, look, you know, wow, I go to UVille, I'm going to get 4 years' worth of starting, and this guy's a real deal. It wasn't a fluke. He's back, you know, the damn Cardinals are back in it again. So now it's not just Baylor or UConn or Tennessee. It's like, yeah, start putting UVille up there with them. They're consistently making the big shows.
Well, I think UofL already gets some of the top prize candidates. I mean, UofL always has a good recruiting class. It's interesting because Kentucky always seems to have the number one recruiting class, and we saw how that worked out this year. You know, recruiting-wise, it's not that big a deal. But I tell you what has been fascinating watching this tournament, though. Take Louisville completely aside right now. I know we're all on a high right now. But, man, you know, they have been talking for years about parity in the NCAA. And if there was ever any indication that we have parity throughout the college ranks right now, I think this NCAA tournament proved it. I mean, look at how many upsets there were. Look at how many lower-seeded teams went on. I mean, you had Harvard win their first game. You know, FGCU, Florida Gulf Coast Atlantic. I mean, these guys, you know, put a Cinderella run on. And it seems like this year the games, for most part, were more competitive, and there were more worrisome outcomes than ever before. I kind of like the direction it's going with college ball.
Yeah, well, I like it because, you know, I remember reading an article last year about UK, and, yes, I cheered for them when they weren't playing UofL. But, you know, they said that if Calipari's team wins, it'd be great for Kentucky, but bad for basketball because it's, you know, he's kind of turning it into an NBA stopover. You know, stack your team, win the title, stack your team again, win the title. And they were saying that there were some writers saying, God, you know, UK is definitely the favorite, but I hope they don't win because this is a collection of all-stars. This is not, you know, the traditional college team.
Right. Well, I think
UofL,
ultimately, too.
UofL is the exact opposite. They're great for basketball. I mean,
well, Pitino,
you're losing Peyton Siva this year. Why? He's graduating.
Exactly. You know? And not only is he graduating, Peyton Siva has the grades, too, man. I think he has like a 3.8 or 3.9 GPA. Peyton Siva is a great example of a student athlete who works hard to strive for success. That guy there, he should be a role model for all kinds of people. I mean, this kid came from basically nothing and has succeeded in everything he's tried, and it's fantastic. And, you know, you look at that. But, you know, you look at UK, too. You know, you talk about a contrasting coaching style. I mean, let's look at John Calipari. He had a number one class again this year. He lost his freshman last year. They went NBA, just like he's done for the last couple of years.
I like to refer to
him as,
you know, they're the number one class in the NCAA, five-star recruits. I refer to him as the intergalactic number one team.
Well, what's interesting, though, is here's a tale of two coaches, because Pitino has always, always made his reputation preaching team ball. You know, Pitino's reputation was sealed a long time ago when Kentucky played LSU back in the days of Jamal Mashburn, and LSU had Shaq. They were playing at Baton Rouge down by 31 at the half and came back and won that game. And that was because of pure team ball and getting the most out of your talent that you can possibly get. Jamal Mashburn wasn't great. Jamal Mashburn was an average. He went on to the NBA for a little while, but he was an average kind of a guy. He wasn't great, But he was able to take it to Shaquille O'Neal and take over that game and dominate against a bigger, more athletic foe. So, you know, you look at Patino, he's known for that. You look at somebody like Calipari, though, it's like Calipari brings in a number one recruiting class, expects them to be able to work together and do everything. And I think this year proved the theory of this one and done in college basketball has to be over, because he had the number one recruiting class.
Yeah.
Had everything in the world
I don't
going
think it's
him,
over.
And
I
he couldn't win.
I think he'll be loaded. I think he's going to win. He may win it all next year. But at least one and done is not the dominant, you know, it's not the new thing. It's like, tell that to Wichita State. They're bringing a bunch of them back. Tell it to Oregon. They're bringing them back. You know, there's a lot of teams out there that are bringing them back. So, you know, meet Michigan. Michigan, whatever happens tonight, Michigan is full of guys that are barely shaven. And they're coming back. You know?
Well, you're right. You're right, but it is interesting though, because it doesn't matter how much talent you get, if you don't work together, you're not gonna get where you need to be. So, you know, and I think that was proven more if any time it needed to be proven, I think it was proven with Kentucky this year. You had the best talent in the world, but if you can't seem to understand the concept of team ball, you're never gonna amount to much. And I think they proved it. We're gonna go ahead and take a quick break, so we can get into some stuff we like to do here, which is politics and what's going on around the world. So we'll take a quick break, get off this sports talk. But, you know, go Cards, man. You're listening to the SMH show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Phone lines are open, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys who are always listening in a queue, just hit that little number one on your dial pad, and we'll get you in as soon as we can. We'll be right back. Thanks.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for ever.
Hey, everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
Yep, the government can. That's what we do here, folks. We talk about the government. That's comedian Tim Hawkins, his song, The Government Can. You can find that song at timhawkins.net, along with several other songs this guy does. It's totally incredible. Mr. Martin.
Mr. Springsteen.
A lot going on in the news. Let's just go ahead and get to some of it. You know, we can't spend the whole show on basketball as much as we'd love to. But this is a political show. This is where we talk about issues and what's going on.
We talked about it way back when we started this show. It's like, you know, are we going to have enough material? And it's usually followed up by, yeah, there's no shortage of material. You know, I love talking sports, and I wish we could talk sports all the time. So I wish all the politicians would just do their job right, be honest with us, and then you and I could talk sports, and we could get into some weird sports like rugby and stuff like that. You know, let's just have some fun with it. But
you know, we probably ought to, but we don't
get that, do we? There's always some idiot doing something stupid or candid or you know. Something that's simply not going to work or unbelievable in politics. So let's get into politics. Sports was fun while it lasted.
Well, what's really, I mean, you know, we ought to probably start doing it. And I know there's something I've thought about, and I'll give it to you individually off air. But, you know, maybe we ought to do like the first Monday of the month or something, you know, just do a complete sports show or something. There are so many people out there that just want to talk about sports. And, you know, we kind of try to stick to the things that are important in life, like the stuff we do here. But, you know, maybe we ought to do that just for fun. Give us a little break, too. In the meantime, a lot going on. Seven counties in Louisville, it's Louisville's Community Mental Health Center, are filing for bankruptcy. And the reason they're filing for bankruptcy, guess what, Ed? I know this is going to be a shock to you. They're filing for bankruptcy because of the escalating pension cost. Apparently, they're going to have to have a major leap in their annual retirement contributions. By 2015, they're going to have to pay $15.9 million in annual retirement, you know, which is crazy. I mean, it's going to almost double the $9.5 million that they're spending right now. You know, and that's because of the reforms that were passed this year through Kentucky House and Senate to get the pension fund plan, the pension system funded. Is this good for a nonprofit? I mean, how are they going to do this? I mean, the bankruptcy is going to be there. Do what?
The risk that they
Ed, you're breaking up.
Okay, let me work on that. Okay. I was going to say, you know, am I better now?
I'm much better. Yes, sir.
Okay. Damn, I don't get to recline. Thanks, man. It's been a long day. I was reclining. But you know, a lot of it has to do with the rate of return. They always... You know, how long you work, how much you contribute to a pension has to do with the rate of return. And for political reasons, so that everybody can get reelected, they've artificially pumped that number up. So, I mean, there's artificial expectations, and they're unrealistic. So, and I've always said, you know, it's like, look, I got to work from 20 to 70. I got to work 50 years. It's, you know, I hate to say it, but the fact is you simply can't work for 30 and retire anymore.
Right.
You're not. I'm sorry. No matter what they tell you, there's not going to be enough compounded interest or compounded returns in your retirement to fund that. So, you know, they're trying to keep so many factors the same, and they're trying to reform what they can with whether it's the contributions or what. It's like they really, you know, it was a half-assed effort. The pension reform not going to work. Going to take you know they're projecting out. Oh well. And after about 30 years, that'll work. It's like, great. So the employees that aren't even hired yet, you know, you're telling them, well, trust us. Like, I don't think so. And the ones that have been paying into it, it's like, yeah, well, we're going to cover you. But they're looking at these young kids that are probably thinking about a career. And it just doesn't work. And yeah, seven counties is illustrating that. I mean, they didn't do any reform on how long you have to work. Or the payout, or you know, or how big the benefits were going to be, which are you know tend to be unsustainable. So they said, well, you'll just have to contribute more because they didn't have the balls to go in and fix a little bit of everything. They just tried to cover the funding side, not worry too much about the disbursement side, and they're screwed.
Well, what's really interesting is, I mean, you know, your politicians aren't suffering for this. Everybody else is, as usual. You know, but one of the things...
Well, pensions are fully funded, man.
Exactly, exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. One of the things about it...
And they're not worth a crap.
Well, if they were doing their job, we wouldn't have this problem, would we?
No, we wouldn't.
You know, but it's interesting because Seven Counties leadership is saying that, you know, this filing is not going to cause any layoffs. and it's not going to affect services for the 32,000 people in the region, you know, who are basically largely low income. You know, what's interesting here is that this is a government mandate that is forcing this a bankruptcy, and seven counties won't be alone, you know, because seven counties is just one business out of thousands that are stuck in this garbage. Seven counties is planning on ceasing all payments to the state public employee retirement system in April. And it's really weird because Seven Counties is the only nonprofit that I know of, a non-government agency, that's even in that plan. And they're going to take their 1,400 employees and switch them into what's called a 403B retirement plan, which is basically like the 401K that everybody's used to hearing in the private sector. You know, it's interesting because, you know, the only reason they have to file bankruptcy, according to them, is because of a cash shortage that will put them out of business by November 2014 because and only because of the Kentucky retirement system. The Kentucky retirement system has not funded themselves. They refuse to do their job. Don't know how they're getting away with it. Kentucky retirement system for state workers has only 27%. We keep telling everybody we're the worst in the nation. This is why.
It's going lower, too.
Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, yeah, it
is. That's with the market going up. Whether the market flattens out or starts going down, then all hell's going to break loose.
Oh, exactly. They're the most poorly funded in the nation, or at least among the most poorly funded. You know, and you look at this, it's really incredible because, you know, by November 2014, according to David Cantor, he's the attorney with them, there is a 100% chance they're out of business. So I don't think there's much doubt that they're going to allow the bankruptcy to go forward. But I think it's disturbing. I think it's very disturbing that it is because of pension costs, because the state has not done their job. They've been taking all these golden parachute pensions and not funding them for decades now. And now all of a sudden we're in this mess. And this is just the tip of the iceberg, in my opinion. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the tip of the iceberg. Like Jake Payne at page one, a lot of it has to do with placement agents. And I've said before, you run into the structural issues of it, where you have a return that you're guaranteed, which is unrealistic. I mean, Social Security pulls about 4.75%, I guess, last I checked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they're guaranteeing the return on these state pensions to be 7.75%. Hell, out in California, it's like 8%. And when you do that, you compound, you know, your turnover, you're double the growth on the equity. So,
right.
You know, you have to work half as long, and they're just unrealistic numbers.
Well, this is another.
That's why you have to work till you're 70 or whatever for Social Security, is because the return on your investment is tied strictly to the rates of Treasury notes. So, you know, that's why you got to work. That's why you got to work 50 years. But
If
Social Security Treasury notes were paying 8%, there'd be more money than you could shake a stick at in the Social Security Trust Fund.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. And when you look at seven counties, too, I mean, what's really interesting here is not only are they the only non-governmental agency in this Kentucky retirement system program, you know, the bankruptcy protection is going to free up $360,000 every 2 weeks that they can put back into service programs and employees. That's basically enough to help 514 children and adults that have mental illness, or help 100 individuals with developmental disabilities find and hold a job for a year. That's incredible what they do. Anthony Zippel, he's the president of Seven Counties, has said they have no plans to close locations. They're not going to lay off any staff. And he went further to say that we don't really have a debt problem. We've got a cash flow problem from the pension obligation. And that is probably disturbing. You know, they get most of their money, if not all of it, from Medicare, Medicaid, and things like that. So they're government funded, and now they've got to file a bankruptcy because the government's putting them out of business because of pension obligations that the government was funding anyway. It's kind of a weird mix, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredibly weird. And, you know, like I said, hats off to the director. He's got the nerve to say it.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the nerve. You know, he's got the nerve to do what he has to do. Yeah, he's a good manager. Please appoint him to a big statewide office. We need people like him.
Well, that's exactly it.
It's unpleasant for the organization. It's humiliating. But he's looking at it saying, all right, you know what? This is what we have to do. Period. Boom. Does it.
Well, I for one am glad.
Yeah.
I'm certainly glad that he has found a way to keep the doors open, because I know there are a lot of people, especially low-income people, have no choice but to go to seven counties when they need any kind of mental health or anything else. And unfortunately, you know, that's where a majority of the mental health problems are, is in the low-income community, or seemingly anyway. So I'm glad to see that Zippel is standing up. I'm glad to see that they're doing what they've got to do to survive and press forward to get help to those who need it most. I'm saddened by the fact that our legislature doesn't get that basic concept. You know, it drives me nuts that they don't. In the meantime, we've got other stories going on. Let's just move again. Governor Steve Beshear has no spine. He is a spineless little twit. Steve Beshear will not sign the hemp bill that was put on his desk for his signature, permitting Kentucky to grow hemp, industrial hemp in Kentucky. He will not veto it either, because he's scared to veto it because of political backlash, because it passed so overwhelmingly with Democrat support. But the bottom line is it's going to be put into law without being signed, because Beshear has no spine. But at the end of the day, that's still good for Kentucky, is it not?
Yeah. I mean, it gets the ball rolling. You know, as they often say in politics, it's not a perfect bill. Well, hey, look at who's writing it. Of course it's not.
Well, it also lets us move forward, because Senator Rand Paul, Representative John Yarmuth, and Senator Mitch McConnell have all said that they will present to the federal government reasons to declassify hemp as an illegal drug or grant us a waiver that's going to allow us to start growing industrial hemp. This will put Kentucky at the forefront. Instead of coming up as the 50th state, this is going to put us in the top three for industrial hemp protection across the United States. Considering that industrial hemp was a big source that put Kentucky on a map before William Randolph Hearst started his one-man crusade trying to outlaw it because it was competing with his timber industry, this could actually help Kentucky get back on the map. And quite frankly, they should take any money made from that and designate it for the pension until it's fully funded, right?
Well, they could, because it's new income. And you know what I like to, when we had this years ago, we had Gatewood on the show. God rest his soul. What a guy.
I loved him. Yeah,
he
go ahead.
He also spoke not just in terms of hemp, but one of the reasons he wanted to get it up and get it up quick and running in Kentucky is because he said the real money comes from seed stock. Yeah. You start, you know, if you get at the front of the line, when you start growing some premium, you know, you get this hemp bred right and you get your hybrids going, other states fall in line. You know, if we're the first state to get there to grow industrial hemp, well, then there's 49 other states and probably some other countries that would be interested in getting a hold of that highly refined Kentucky grade hemp seed, so that they can get their hemp going. But, you know, you've got an established crop, you've got an established seed crop. So, yeah, let's get in the head of the line, because once you do, other states are going to follow, and they can buy those seeds from us, too.
Oh, I agree with you totally. And, you know, I'm wondering how fast this could happen. Jamie Comer, you know, as everybody knows, Ag Commissioner Jamie Comer was the key figure in all of this. He's been pushing for this. He ran on this as a platform to get it passed, and he succeeded. You know, but he's actually hoping, and he thinks that we might actually have our farmers start planting industrial hemp next spring. Now, I think that's going to be awful quick. I don't think the feds will move that fast. But is that possible?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, it could be a controlled crop. It could just be a crop that not so much for the industrial hemp processing, but for seed stock, you know, to start getting some hardy plants going. You know, let natural selection take its course. They're a little crossbreeding, and yeah, I think the first few crops are going to be for seed stock, you know, to get loaded up and get ready. So when we get all the kinks ironed out, we're going to be ready to go, and there's going to be tons of seeds ready to plant.
I think you're probably right. And State Rep Paul Hornback out of Shelbyville, you know, he was one of the primary sponsors of the industrial hemp bill. You know, he estimates that the market for hemp products, and of course, folks, that's going to include clothing, fuel. I mean, you know, Ford even made a car completely made out of hemp many, many, many years ago. You know, but he says right now the market for hemp products in the U.S. is right around $400 million a year. Now, once we get this where we can start growing industrial hemp again, I would anticipate we would take over as one of the leaders in the world in industrial hemp production, and that number would grow exponentially. Would you agree with that?
I don't know why we wouldn't. You know, because if we're at the forefront, again, just like with biomass, one of the problems you run into is it's a woody, fibrous crop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not like something like oil or something that you can transport long, long distances, you know, in truck. It gets too damn expensive for the cubic foot. So, yeah, I think you're going to look at a lot of regional, a lot of localized businesses when it comes to refining it into whatever products you need, because you simply, like I said, you just simply don't fill a tractor trailer up full of, you know, raw hemp stocks and ship them off. It's just, there's just not enough money in it, so you have to set up the processing local, and we're going to get that.
Well, I think it's good. I think it's a time that industrial hemp has come. Let's just see if Mitch McConnell, Ron Paul, and John Yarmuth have the pull to get at least, at the very least, a federal waiver so that we can start production next spring, like Jamie Comer has mentioned. But speaking of Ag Commission Jamie Comer, you know, great job already. I mean, you know, when he went into office, he did a couple of things right away. One, he started pushing the industrial hemp bill immediately. And the first thing he did when he took office was order an audit of the entire department. As part of that audit has unfolded, and what we've been privy to, Richie Farmer, of course, the former Ag Commissioner, is now up on 42 ethics charges. You know, but at the same time, you know, Jamie Comer has been holding the staff accountable. Deputy Commissioner Bruce Harper, who worked under Farmer and kept that job with Jamie Comer when he came in, has now been fired. You know, well, he was given the option to resign or be fired, so you're basically fired. You're just putting in writing you're resigning so you can save face, but you're still fired. You know, he gave him, he told him he was gone, period. He's got three ethics charges against him by the Executive Branch Ethics Commission. So once again, Jamie Comer is coming into office and saying, look, we're going to play by the rules. We're not going to play this game. You know, so he's firing a deputy commissioner who has ethics problems. I think that's another good sign that we might have somebody in office that we can depend on. What do you think?
Well, yeah, and by the same token, I think he has to do that because he's a lone Republican victor, and he did get more votes than anybody. So he's kind of pointed, you know, with partisan politics, he's the lone Republican, so you know he's probably a little more likely to get investigated. So he's going to call it in on himself, get it over with. But, you know, biggest Republican vote getter of the election, he's got to be eyeing the governorship. So he's, you know, he's got to be a doer.
Well, let's look at the reality, too, though, because, you know, Harper is a Republican. He worked for Richie Farmer in the Ag Commission office. Richie Farmer was Republican. So, you know, for a Republican to fire a Republican or a Democrat to fire a Democrat, that says a hell of a lot about your integrity, because in today's world, politics trumps all when you're an elected official. And the fact that he took advantage of this and said, hey, look, you know, you're not going to stay here. You're going to go. You can go voluntarily or I can fire you. I mean, to me, that says a lot because he just stood up to the Republican Party as well, did he not?
Well, he stood up for the Republican Party. And, you know, like I said, in a way, there's a little more honor if he does it before Adam Eveland or somebody does it or Jack Conway
mm-hmm.
does it. I think he's cutting them off at the knees. But I also think to some degree, like I say, when you're the top vote getter in the state
mm-hmm.
for period, even you know, I think beat everybody but Beshear. I know he beat all the Republicans. They're naturally eyeing him up for the governorship, so he's got to show that he's got morals, he's got ethics, he's got the balls to do, you know, to lop off the heads that need to be lopped off. Like he said, it's just a pragmatic thing. If you're out of a higher office, you got to cut your dead baggage loose. You know, if this
mm-hmm.
guy's a problem, do not take him with you. Do not, you know, and you know he's a problem. Hey, trust it. The Democrats are going to find out that they're going to find that out, and it's going to be a commercial that writes itself in the future. So he's doing it because it's right, I'm sure, but I'm also sure he's cutting any losses. He's cutting loose any anchors, any boat anchors on his future career too.
Well, you're right. He's doing a good job managing the agency today because, I mean, one of the biggest deals that Rich Farmer had was his fuel lab everybody's heard about. And that was a joke. That was nothing more than a lab that was designed to pay patronage, if you will, to political supporters. I mean, you're talking about a lab that's got $3.1 million in equipment, costs $900,000 a year to operate, you know, including $200,000 a year in rent. Are you kidding me? But Jamie Comer came in. He took the down. He took the lab and made it what it was supposed to be. Got rid of 9 employees and put a chemist on the payroll. One chemist. Now it's only going to cost $330,000 a year, including rent, and it's going to save about $600,000. So he's not only cleaning house from the ethical standpoint. He's also taking charge of where the money is going. And you know, you talk about a guy who's leading on industrial hemp, who's cleaning up his office. You know, as soon as he gets in, I don't know. I've got a lot of hope for Jamie Comer in the future, and so far I've been real pleased with what he's been able to do. You know, now switching, let's go to Louisville again. Quick question for our listening audience. I've got to go there, man. You know, we had a story coming out last week. It was late in the week, so we didn't get it on the air. Another police officer is in trouble. A Louisville Metro police officer and a woman he was out on a date with were off duty last July. And, you know, they lied to the grand jury last month and said they were attacked by a group of men in a parking lot. And one of the men punched the officer in the face while another man was jumping on his vehicle and smashing his windshield. Turns out every bit of that was a lie. Officer Joseph Pence, LMPD Officer Joseph Pence, and his date that night, if his girlfriend or just a one-night date, we don't know, Veronica Ziegler, both lied to the grand jury. You know, they finally testified that Pence followed a group of men to an apartment complex after one of the guys threw something at his blue Mazda and cursed at him at a stoplight in the Heights Point area. Then they said the guys surrounded the car and punched the officer through his window. That was a lie, folks. LMPD lies. I know this firsthand, and you'll get to know more about that in the very near future, I promise you. But in the meantime, turns out Pence was drunk 5 hours after, this incident, took a breathalyzer, and he still blew a .14 5 hours later. This
dude,
guy
not,
was drunk
bro,
as a skunk.
You're in a stratosphere on that.
And I'm telling you, he's got to be at a .25 or .28 or better 5 hours previous to that. But Sergeant Rick Poland, he's the guy that investigated this, told the grand jury that Pence and Ziegler lied to police. They tried to say that Ziegler was driving, the girl was driving, instead of Pence. Pence was drunk. They were stopped at a red light, didn't like the noise coming from the car beside him. Chased these guys basically to their apartment complex, you know, and lied to cops and said Ziegler had been driving so he wouldn't be held accountable for it. Say he didn't drive over anybody, but he did. He drove over one guy. Interestingly enough, Veronica Ziegler, the one that he was with, lied to the police, but then told grand jurors that the police who showed up at the scene, because while this was going on in the parking lot, somebody called 911. The police who showed up at the scene, the first officers on the scene, told her to say that she had been driving and not Officer Pence. Ziegler told the grand jury that the LMPD officers that were first on the scene told Pence, the officer Pence, to get in the passenger seat and told her to get behind the wheel of the vehicle. They wanted her in the driver's seat for the investigation. Now, I'm not saying that police lie. Yeah, I am. Police lie all the time. This is nothing new. I can't tell you how many situations we keep running into each and every day where an LMPD officer is out there lying about a sequence of events that he started, you know, or she started, you know, for anything. They've got this God complex going on. And, you know, so this is very, very interesting. So now these guys have actually been brought up on charges.
Well, I go so far to say some of them have. Some of them do because – obviously, we've got a policeman who's doing the investigation did not toe the thin blue line. He said, look, people are lying here and came out and said it. So, you know, there are good ones, too.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, quite frankly, in this particular situation, there was only a dozen witnesses there. So there's really no way to lie when you've got a dozen people witnesses, okay? You're going to have to stand up at that point. Now, this guy may have been a good guy. I don't know. I'm not talking about the cop who investigated this, because I know the police that investigated my case and a few others didn't do their job correctly. You know, we'll get into more detail on that at LouisvillePolitics.com in the very near future. But, you know, so we look at this, though. The guy that Pence hit, a guy by the name of Taylor, 23 years old, he hit him in the hip with his car. You know, and everything else. So this guy had to have some medical attention.
I hate it when that happened. Yeah.
And what was really interesting here as well is the first officers on the scene, not only did they tell Veronica Ziegler to lie to protect Pence, They took Taylor, the guy that was hit with the car, and another guy that was with him, put him in handcuffs and put him on the ground for several hours while the first responders were sitting over there laughing with Officer Pence about the situation. This is what they do. This is what they do. They try to scare this kid into compliance and everything else. This is crazy to me that this happens. Now, you would think that this is a one-time event, but it's not. We have continual stories coming out. I don't know if anybody remembers the story of Charles Randall Moore. He's been suspended from LMPD in 13 years. He'd been suspended 7 times, reprimanded 8, still on the force today. I've been the subject of 4 criminal investigations, never charged, lied about court appearances he didn't make and got paid, maintained sexual material on his computer, repeatedly lied to his bosses. I could go on and on and on. All this happened under Chief Robert White, but Moore is still on the daggone department today. In 2010, there was a lengthy story done by the Courier-Journal about this guy, through the Kentucky Open Records Act, and it was amazing. And what Chief, man, this is so funny. What Chief Robert White had to say when the Courier-Journal was talking to him about this back in 2010, 3 times he had already told Moore that if he had any other violations, he would be terminated. And he was never terminated. He's still on the force today, making $63,000 a year. I checked it earlier. But what was really interesting was how the chief went on a defense against the Courier-Journal reporter, which tells you that this is a systemic pattern of behavior. And I say that for this reason. Because Chief White was quoted in the Courier-Journal article during an hour-long interview that says, "You are painting a negative picture of somebody that's totally unfair with the BS that you write that is unfair. When you maliciously discredit somebody's character and defame them, that is unethical." Now, when a cop illegally arrests you or puts people like Mr. Taylor on the ground in handcuffs because he was hit by a drunk police officer and they wanted to protect him, how ethical is that? And then, of course, further in the article, Chief White tries to justify, and he goes on to say, "To be honest with you, I think it's a little unfair to focus on one police officer when there are other officers that have done similar things." I can see this is going to be very nasty. Yeah, you're singling out an officer.
To me, that's like, thank you very much. I'll go look for those now, too.
Exactly.
Thanks for the heads up.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's going on he's telling you, "To be honest with you, I think it's a little unfair to focus on one police officer when there are other officers that have done similar things." You're singling out an officer where so many other people have done similar behaviors. What that tells me, straight from the chief of police's mouth, is that he has a system in place that he condones that allows his officers to do this. So this isn't a one-time officer. When you're sitting there accusing the Courier-Journal reporter who has 15 different occurrences on one officer, the guy was told he was going to be fired 3 times and still has his job, to sit there and tell them, "Why are you picking on him? Because everybody else does it too." Is that a legitimate argument? Is that ethical behavior?
I think it's one that if it was good for Chief White, thankfully he's not with us anymore in Louisville. But if it was good enough for the police, I think it should be good enough for the people who celebrate a little too much on Derby Day, or mm-hmm. maybe they celebrate a little too much tonight. To say, "Hey, everybody's doing it. There's people doing worse. Let it slide." "Hey, officer, why are you focusing on me throwing bottles in the street? Everybody's doing it. Come on." What are the cops supposed to say? Well, my point there. Carry on.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, how do you sit here and talk about ethics in one breath and then tell the whole world that you've got an unethical police department that you're in charge of and you're not willing to hold them accountable? That's the whole thing. And the reason this is important is because recently, over the last year and a half, we continue to get more and more reports of victims of police violence, of police unethical behavior, including me. I've been a victim of LMPD, and this is incredible to me that we would continue allowing this kind of stuff. Now, Chief Conrad, Chief Steve Conrad replaced Robert White. We sent Robert White to Denver, and Denver is so sick of him, they can't stand it. I've actually been on Denver's radio a couple of times talking about the fallacies of Chief White, because they're still dumbfounded on how he got hired there. But, you know, Chief Conrad came in here. He's been in office less than a year. He's been in that position less than a year, you know. But when you have a whole system of officers, now remember, we've got over 1,200 officers here. When you have a whole system of officers who are continually allowed to do anything they want to do with no repercussions, that tells every officer it's okay. Once you get that mindset, then nobody is safe. And you know, that's the thing. So can Chief Conrad correct that? I don't know. We'll find out. But I find it very disturbing, especially when we can, you know, when we're being told that, you know, it's like if everybody jumps off the bridge, are you going to follow them? You know, well, everybody else jumped off the bridge. Well, you do something like this with this cop. Well, everybody else does it. This is from a chief, the guy who's in charge.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. So here you've got at least two or three different examples of police just in the last year and a half, 2 years, that cannot be trusted to tell the truth. You don't.
Yeah, and then when they can be told, and then when somebody like Robert White tells the truth, it blows your mind. I'm sure he told the truth. There's plenty of other officers that have done worse. It's like, wow, really?
Mm-hmm.
Are you serious? You know, you just said that? You know, you should say, you know, he should have said something. I mean, if he was a little more savvy, he would have said something like, oh, you know, you're focusing on, like, the worst officer on the force. But, no, he didn't say that. He said, oh, lots of others do it. You know, not a couple. But plenty of others do it. And worse. Wow. And you know about it, and you're defending that behavior. You're defending that behavior by telling me that there's worse behavior out there. And, well, okay.
Well, you know what's really
I'm feeling
really
real good about those blue lights coming on in my rearview mirror now.
Well, I tell you what really makes it very alarming as well, though, Ed, is because now we have public records all over the place of these police that lie. What if you're a perp? What if you get arrested, falsely arrested, and falsely accused of a crime you didn't commit, like I did last July? Okay? I didn't back down. My case was finally dismissed a couple of weeks ago. They had no choice because they couldn't prove it. But what if you get arrested, falsely accused, and these cops go to court? You know, these cops, they're lying in their testimony. How many people are in jail right now or have a criminal record or something on their record based on a lie by a police officer? Because we cannot trust the LMPD. We've proven that over and over again. We cannot trust them. So how many people are suffering now needlessly because these lying pricks got away with it? That bothers me more than anything. How many guys are in jail, have been arrested, spent the night in jail, you know, have had, you know, stuff on their background checks now that's costing them from getting a job? You know, you look at somebody like Charles Randall Moore, that Chief White was trying to protect for some reason. In 2008, he was suspended by Chief White, you know, more than once. He got 20 days on one suspension, because a guy had 13 different driver's licenses and ID cards that belonged to other people that he had contact with. He was suspended for 4 days after that because he lied to three different department officials about his home address and wouldn't let them know where he lived for more than a year. Now, this is a police officer doing this, folks. And then we've got Joe Pence out there doing it now. And the first cops on the scene tried to protect Pence because he was drunk. So this isn't, you know, one or two random acts. The first cops on the scene with Pence tried to cover his ass. So now you've got three or four police. Police don't show up at those things by themselves. They have two or three cop cars that show up at the same time, especially at night, especially in Hikes Point. So you've got four cops there. One was drunk as a skunk. The other three handcuff a guy who was hit by the officer's car, and lays him on the ground for several hours so they can have a good laugh with the drunk cop who was driving. So we know that there's at least four or five different officers here. This is indicative of a bigger problem. This is an out-of-control Louisville Metro Police Department that needs to be reined in. I hope, beyond hope, that Chief Conrad can get that done, because I'm not sure he can. There's a lot there, man.
Yeah,
There's a lot there.
Well, if he can't get it done, smartphones will. Just like not too long ago when it showed the cop slapping the crap out of a handcuffed suspect and stuff. Like, yeah, just keep it up, boys, you know. Everybody's got one. That's what always amazed me. You know, I have that talk with my daughter. Say, don't do anything out of line because everybody's got one of these things, you know. So they'll get you, you know. Not at a concert, not at a bar, not at school. Do not do it, you know.
But you know, you take somebody like Charlie Moore. This guy, all the records are there, out in public view. They've been publicized. They've been out there. Everything you could possibly do to the man. And the only thing they're going to do is pay somebody off. That's it. The guy still got a job. He had a job, 15 different incidences that he was accused of doing stuff on. He kept his job, 20-day suspension, kept his job. You know, I mean, these smartphones are great. We can get all kinds of video of cops doing different things. I took a picture of the cops that arrested me last July, just Friday night. I got a nice picture of them hiding behind a building over off of Valley Station Road, sitting there bullshitting with each other, car to car, for about 30 minutes, not doing a damn thing when they're supposed to be out on patrol. You know, so, I mean, we've got all these pictures, we've got all this video, but these cops continue to keep their job. That's the problem. When do we get accountability? I don't have the answer to that. In the meantime, my friend, we are about out of time. We will not be going into overdrive tonight, folks. We got a Louisville game to watch here shortly. And so, Ed, final thoughts. Mr. Martin, hello? Hello?
Hello.
Okay, final thoughts, my friend. I lost you.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, not only do we rag on the government, and here lately you've been after the police pretty good, but we rag on the media. And that's... You know, we do what we do. We don't make any money at it. We actually lost some money at it. And, you know, it's time for the mainstream media to quit chasing the fluff stories and get nasty about this stuff. I mean, if they need to take the gloves off, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, whether it's a lazy, you know, state employee goofing off and stealing like Richie Farmer, or whether it's a cop that's simply abusing his authority or just simply not earning his pay. And the media has to develop a spine, because let's face it, everybody's going to watch a little news before American Idol comes on, or The Voice, or Dancing with the Stars, or yes, U of L winning the national title, as they will tonight. we're all fixated on our media, and it's whether it's the TV or the print media or the radio media. It's like, guys, you got to light these guys up, because they're not going to self-police. Politicians are not going to – they have no self-discipline. They don't go after each other, only rarely. Cops don't go after each other. People – it's like, guys, the media is that gray area that's between the average Joe citizen and the power elite, and that's who we're counting on to help take down and keep the elite in check, and they're not doing their job.
Well, I think that's a good point, because they're not doing their job at any level, and that's the problem. You know, you mentioned mainstream media doing the fluff pieces. You can turn on any local news channel you want and see the same exact story at the same exact time throughout the newscast. You know, I don't get that. You know, you mentioned the fact that we've been doing this for a long time and we actually lose money. Yes, we do. We've lost a buttload of money. You know, and that's one of the things. Could you imagine for one second how much we could accomplish if we actually had funding? That is what's so crazy about it. We get more done with the real stories in a day than mainstream media does seemingly in a year. And that's incredible. And I'll give you a good example of that. You know, I send out open records requests all the time. It's a daily part of life for what I do, to expose and find out everything we can find out about situations. Friday, last Friday, I sent out an open records request, and within 45 minutes, LMPD was calling me to ask me why I wanted these records. It was a legitimate open records request. I won't go into detail what it was, but they had LMPD call me to ask me why I wanted these records. What story was I working on? And I flat out told them, not a story. Not yet. But I'm entitled to these records under the Kentucky Open Records Act, and I just want them, period. I'm working on a story, If you're that damn insecure about it, then I will call you when I get done with the story, and I will give you a chance to make a quote. You know, they called 10 minutes before the Louisville game in the Sweet 16 last Friday. They called for 3 hours up to that point, and I ignored the phone call. I finally answered because it was 7:05, and I didn't want to be bothered during the Louisville game. So, you know, that was interesting because that's what's going on here, folks. I have sent out, you know, tons of open records requests to LMPD and others. But as soon as I start sniffing around for something that might hurt LMPD, that was their way of saying, hey, look, we're watching you. You know what I mean? That was the intimidation factor.
Yeah.
And that is not going to be acceptable to me. So, yeah, I wish we had funding. I really do. We could set up all kinds of neat little things. But when they feel like they've got an inherent right to intimidate and threaten, falsely accuse, falsely arrest, then we've got a serious problem. Well, we've got officers like Joe Pence who made a bad mistake drinking and driving and then compounded that mistake by getting stupid with his car. He was just indicted for wanton endangerment, official misconduct, and driving under the influence. That was bad enough. But when the first police on the scene start trying to cover this mess up to protect him by trying to order his girlfriend to lie, and she did, you know, because she was intimidated, I'm sure. So she's ordering him to lie, him and her to lie, and then handcuff the same people that Pence hurt in the first place when he hit the guy with his car and leave him on the ground and go have a laugh with this drunk officer. That's alarming. This is no longer about one cop making a bad decision. This is about a bunch of cops making bad decisions, and those decisions affect each and every one of us every single day. That's it for tonight, folks. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, same time, same channel. Hopefully we'll be celebrating a Cardinal victory. But in the meantime, when we get here, we'll be talking tomorrow night quite a bit. We've got to get into some national stuff, man. I tell you, I love Barack Obama giving back 5% of his paycheck like he's really accomplishing anything for the greater good. We'll talk more about that tomorrow night. That's it for tonight. Mr. Martin, thank you so much. We'll see you soon.
All right. Have a good one, Mrs. Springfield.
All right. Folks, take care. Have a great night. Thanks for listening.